Hi, welcome to the Yankees Magazine podcast. I'm Hillary Georgie, and joining me is Nathan Makaborski.
Hello there.
And John Schwartz.
Hello.
Made it through the ALDS, guys. How are we feeling other than tired?
Ugh. Pretty amazed. That was a heck of a series. A lot of fun. Definitely need to catch up on some sleep after that, but well worth it.
How different are the emotions for everybody right now compared to Friday night?
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, night and day.
Yeah, after that game two loss, I mean, I didn't want to look at a baseball on Saturday. I wanted nothing to do with sports. I was so disheartened. But, I mean, give this team credit. Every last guy on the roster believed that they could do this, and it's really pretty remarkable. I mean, to beat an Indians team that was so good all year, that had won 22 straight games not that long ago.
When was the last time they had ever lost three in a row?
I think it was
this season. It was in June. That's crazy.
Yeah. They really pulled off quite a feat. So excited to take the next step here.
Headed to the ALCS and leading the way. Manager Joe Girardi, kind of a great comeback for him. And that brings us to a story that John wrote for this October issue of Yankees Magazine about Joe and the Joe Girardi Show. So, John, tell us a little bit about our manager, Joe Girardi.
Well, it's tough. I mean, it's been a weird week to talk about Joe Girardi. I did not think when we put this story in the October issue that Girardi's on-field work would become a story. I mean, Girardi, he's been around here a long time, and when you manage a team for a long time, there are going to be people who love you and there are going to be people who don't. But we can argue back and forth about the whole issue of the challenge or anything like that and how important it was and how wrong or right it was. But one thing you expect kind of is just that Joe Girardi is Joe Girardi and you're going to know what to expect from him. I did not expect for him to be the defining off-day story. But, you know, obviously now that things have resettled themselves, I guess we can talk about the Joe Girardi Show. So basically, just to give a little bit of background here, I had noticed over the course of the season that Meredith Marakovitz on her social media accounts was posting these fun pictures from these trips they were taking to film the YES Network's Joe Girardi Show. And it had previously been this just kind of like studio show. And I mean, no disrespect when I say this, just very recappy, very much talking about the week before and talking about the week to come. And there are people who love that. And it serves a purpose. I don't know how much use I have for something like that. And all of a sudden, though, they were just going on these road trips together. And I became fascinated by this idea of this changing perspective on Joe Girardi. And that's what I decided to look into with the story, which was, what is Joe Girardi like for these shoots and how do they work?
What were your impressions of Joe before doing the story? What were your impressions during the story? What are your impressions now?
I can start with expectations first, which was, I think Girardi's great to work with. I've never had a bad one-on-one experience with him. Anytime I've needed something, he's been easy to deal with. He's thoughtful. He's smart.
Certainly prepared. Experienced.
He's experienced. Yeah. So, you know, my experience with him in personally was just, you know, this is a very rigid, very, you know, direct centered in a sense person on who he was. And he wasn't going to really perform for anyone or anything. And that was part of what intrigued me about this. If you go watch some of the old episodes of it, you know, he's getting his family involved and his daughter, Lena, and he's just very different on this show. He's very engaged. He's really excited about when he's talking to people about the things that they do best. He really, really has a lot of questions. I talk about it a lot in the story. You know, he's kind of obsessed with like pizza makers and their pepperoni and like just the way that they get the like perfect curls of burnt pepperoni. And you can see that this is a guy who like is not just, you know, trying to fill time on a TV show. Like he really, really wants to learn more about this pepperoni.
He's actually legitimately interested in this pepperoni.
Right. And the thing is, so how does that jive with a guy who, you know, acts so emotionless on the field, who just scowls as he, you know, heads to the mound to, you know, make a pitching change and things like that? Is this where he's getting his joy? Is it that he's performing on the camera or is it that he's performing in the dugout? That was what I really wanted to find out.
And the answer is?
The answer to me, it seems like a life in baseball teaches you how to put on your game face. But I don't think that you can have a game face in the way he is when he's saying to you know, someone to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and just a total non sequitur, why Dire Straits needs to be inducted into the Hall of Fame and going through all the reasons why they need to be, like, that you can't just, Joe Girardi likes to do a lot of research and he likes to be prepared for everything, but that doesn't strike me as something like, okay, I've prepared a 1 minute monologue on Dire Straits. You can tell that's a lifetime of thinking about Dire Straits. So which is real, it seems to me it's more likely that it's the guy who's, you know, pitching Dire Straits for the Hall of Fame.
Why can't two things be true though? I feel like, why can't he be the guy who loves Dire Straits and wants him to be in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and also the rigid manager? Like, he can be both things, can't he?
Well, in reality, he probably is to a degree. My question, though, is can he really be so emotional in one side and so emotionless in the other side? I think, to me, it seemed like, you know, I mean, there's an example I put in the story. You guys know, every home game this season, you know, he meets with the media before every game, but for every home game, he's done it wearing the t-shirt of a charitable organization. And if you watch him, what he does is he sits down behind the microphone and does about 2 minutes on what this organization is. He has a paper next to him so he can make sure he gets details right. But he names the people involved with it. He gives a little bit of information about how it started and what it is. Now, the reality is there's a couple people watching this, you know, live feed probably, who are seeing that. The media, it was a novelty and it was interesting the first day, the first couple days, and they wrote about it. But really, like, he's not getting that much, you know, publicity for these people by doing this. But he's doing it because it's important. There's no reason for it to happen other than it's important to him, that he has a microphone and he has a bunch of people who are listening to him. And so he's going to spend 2 minutes of his day talking about this. I don't think that's what most people think of when they think of Joe Girardi. But the fact of the matter is, if you work around him and you go to these press conferences every day, it is the first thing you hear him say. So I think that there is that side to him, obviously. There is that side to him that just cares very deeply about his players and winning. But at the same time, if he feels like he's going to need to sit you down, even if that might, you know, affect your belief in yourself or your confidence or your impression of who you are, he wears jersey number 28 right now, and he wants to wear jersey number 29 next year. Mm-hmm. So he's going to do whatever it takes to make that happen.
Yeah, and, you know, cares very deeply about his family, too, which comes across in this piece. I like the part about his daughter's involvement in the show this year. I thought that was, you know, an important aspect to include in this piece, which, no, I really enjoyed this piece a lot. I think it's hard to say, I'm going to write a story about a manager, you know, who's been here for a long time. It's mid-season. It's tough to come up with kind of unique angles sometimes. Like, if we just say, all right, what can we write about Joe Girardi? Well, he managed 162 games this year for the, you know, 9th or 10th year in a row that he's been here. So I thought this was a really kind of unique way to show him in a different light. You know, all the pictures in here are of him off field. And I thought that what I came away with after reading this is that Joe is a guy who really just appreciates greatness. So on all these trips, he seems to be kind of drawn to other people who have had success in whatever the field may be, whether it's rock and roll or making pepperoni pizza, or, you know, you went down to Dallas and you have a picture of him looking at the Super Bowl trophies there.
He spent a lot of time staring at those.
Yeah, it's a guy who I could kind of see him taking notes through the story about just how other people who have had success, what they've done to get there.
And I mean, here's the thing. You can watch the episode on Yes Network. You can go to yesnetwork.com and find the episode. It's the one I focused on was his trip to the new Dallas Cowboys training facility in Frisco, Texas. I really tried to do a good job of explaining this in the story, and I hope it gives some background so that if you watch the episode, you could see it. I cannot express to you, as interesting and as lavish as that place was, I cannot explain to you the way that, like, a switch just went click in his entire body when we went into that weight room. And he was just looking around there and just marveling at this machinery and asking so many questions. And Meredith, who is a great host of this show and a great partner for Joe in doing the show, I mean, she didn't have to do anything. He was interviewing this strength and conditioning coach about all the equipment, asking questions, literally marveling at it like it was a child.
I mean, he is a gym rat beyond.
So. Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the story, you know, his his weight right now is within 5 pounds of his playing weight, which is people don't do that. They don't stay in that kind of shape after they retire. You, again, this is, not to keep repeating myself, you can't fake that. Like, that wasn't like a guy who was saying, okay, the red light's on and I need to look like I'm excited about this. You know, maybe there were other parts of the day that it was a little bit of faking it. But when he got into that weight room and he's talking to a guy whose job it is to train NFL players, this was literally Joe Girardi's wheelhouse. And I thought that was a lot of fun. And I thought that, you know, first off, the Cowboys were amazing at giving us all the access to this place. The YES Network team involved in this, from Meredith to the producer, Eric Rolden, to all the camera. It's just a great operation they have. I say this probably 36 times on these podcasts so far. I'm a total sucker for behind-the-scenes things. Which is why I was excited to do this story. And it was really fun just to watch how they make this TV show, which, you know, they filmed on Friday, and on Sunday it was, you know, on TV. Yeah. You know, I got to spend a couple weeks writing the story. They got to spend a couple hours editing this TV show. That stuff was really fun for me. I was glad I got to see it. But I really, like I said, I just enjoyed, you know, I'm going to be back here next year. And I assume Joe Girardi's going to be back here next year. And we'll do 162 games together. And it's just, it's nice when you see something that is a little bit different from what your expectations are. And that was what my goal with the story was just to say, you know what? You yell at this guy through your TV screen and you freak out at the decisions he makes, or you love him when the decisions go right. I think if you take away game two of this division series and you look at the wild card game and four of the other playoff games, it seems like every button he pushed in this playoffs, other than that one moment, has really come of gold. So that's an important part of who he is, but I think it's important to see these other parts of him too, which is how he is when he's with his family, which is how he is when he's thinking about his father and using that inspiration to put a pizza oven in his backyard and perfect the art of making pizza, because that's how he feels a connection to his father. I think that, you know, anything that you can do to understand, whether it's, you know, Ronald Torres or Aaron Judge or Joe Girardi, to understand them a little bit better, I think it enhances your ability to watch the games and experience the team in full.
Definitely. I think you nailed it with the story. I think it shows a different side of Girardi, like Nate was saying, something that you don't get to see often. So great work with it. And question for you, which is the better trophy, the Vince Lombardi trophy or the Commissioner's trophy for the World Series? You've seen them both up close now.
So the Commissioner's trophy, it changed a couple years back. And I say a couple, it's more like 15 now, I think. I happen to think the new version is just glorious and gorgeous. It's just a perfect trophy. The old one was a little bit like tacky, kind of like some weird gold stuff there. The problem I have with the Commissioner's trophy is, if you look at old Commissioner's trophies, those little flags at the top of it, they're not that sturdy, and half of them are kind of like bent down over. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's great when you look at it for the first time, but, you know, it takes a lot of work to keep that going. There's something very perfect about the Vince Lombardi trophy. I love that it, like, you look at the Vince Lombardi trophy and you just know this trophy must go to the football champion. Like, it's just very clear. I remember I used to take the bus to school with a kid whose parents worked for Tiffany, and they were on the group that actually every year would do the trophy, and he would always talk about that come Super Bowl time. So for me, I think I do have a slight affinity for and maybe even a preference for the Vince Lombardi trophy. But with that said, you know, I think there are 25 guys who work in this building who, you know, should they bring home the Commissioner's trophy, they're probably not going to ask me what my preference is.
Yeah, probably not. Probably least likely question to be asked.
I will say, I think it was before we started filming, when Girardi was just kind of looking over the trophies, someone asked him, you know, so which is better? That same question. And he was just like, well, I don't know what it's like to play. I mean, it was like the perfect Girardi answer. It wasn't like anything like, he's like, well, I don't know what it's like to play for this one, but I know what it's like to play for. And it's just like, okay, well, that's, you know, that's how you open your binder.
Great politically correct
exactly.
answer.
Like, but I don't even know if political correctness is the thing there. I think it's just like this idea that, like, again, it goes back to what I've been saying here. You know, there are certain, if you ask him about, you know, what kind of pepperoni he likes better, you know, he'll give you a dissertation on it. But you talk about these trophies and it just he just reverts to baseball Joe Girardi, and the answer is contained herein. And mm-hmm. these are the, you know, this is how I came to my decision and my conclusion, yada, yada, yada. It's
just cite 17 sources and you got a great answer.
Exactly. Well, John, I think our readers appreciate your penchant for doing behind the scenes work. You know, I think you take people into a place where few are allowed. and it makes for a great story. So this is it's called The Showman. It's in the October issue of Yankees Magazine, which if you're a subscriber, you should have received by now. And if you were at the stadium for any of those exciting games last week, the wild card game or the division series games, it's the same program, essentially. We put a different cover on for those series, but the insides are all the same. The Joe Girardi feature is in there. Hillary's Gary Sanchez feature, which we discussed on the last episode, is in there. And there's a lot of other stuff, too, to check out. So be sure to pick up the October issue, our last official issue of 2017, although we never stop working, so
there's always something going on.
You'll have to stay tuned to see what's next from the Yankees publications department.
Stick around for that. And also coming up on the podcast, we're going to talk a little recap of the ALDS and a little preview of the ALCS, so stick around. So honestly, guys, when we were down 0-2, did you ever expect that we would be here now preparing for Game 1 of the American League Championship Series?
Well, I mean, for me, I will say that I have been in baseball long enough to know that you can expect anything. I mean, anything can happen. Nothing really shocks me. But I will say that this one was particularly memorable just because of the way we lost game two. Sometimes I can't detach myself from being a fan, and I was, like I said earlier, really disheartened after that loss. But clearly, the guys in that clubhouse were not. You hear baseball players talk about it all the time. It's such a cliche. You got to turn the page. Tomorrow's a new day. They were able to do that, you know, while everybody in New York was kind of stewing over that tough loss. They turned the page and they looked ahead to game three, and boy, what a game that was.
What a game. You know? Tanaka coming up huge.
Tanaka coming up huge. Greg Bird with the solo shot. Aaron Judge with the catch to rob the 2-run homer in a 1-0 win. And, you know, it definitely brought back memories of the flip play. You know, it was kind of the same scenario where it's a best of five series. We're down 0-2 and just a really, really tight game three where you kind of felt like one play could be the difference. And in that game, it was a Jorge Posada solo home run, and it was a tag out at home plate. And in this game, it was a defensive play out in right field where our right fielder is 6'7".
Barely even had to jump for that ball.
Yeah. But what a huge play that was. And then Greg Bird comes up the next inning with the solo homer. And after that, it was like, okay, maybe we can, you know, string something together here.
Yeah,
the pulse was back for sure. After that game, and really after every game so far at Yankee Stadium, whether it was the wild card game or the two home games during the division series, all the players talked about what a boost the crowd has given them so far.
The crowd has been insane.
It has. And really, I don't remember it being this loud even in 2009 when we were winning. And I think because, you know, our backs were never really against the wall in the same way in 2009. You know, we were never forced into that elimination situation. So, you know, when it's do or die, I mean, the crowd is locked in from the first pitch. And so I think that has been a factor as well into why these crowds have been so great so far.
It's a strange thing because, you know, Nate, you and I both have been to a lot of postseason games in the Bronx. That wild card game was insane. Mm-hmm. The sound in this place, I can't express like just how crazy that crowd was. The crowd, I personally wasn't here for game three, but what everyone said was that the moment after that Greg Bird home run was louder than anything they'd heard in 2009.
Yeah, I was sitting in the press box for that, and it was a wall of just, I can't explain it. It was the loudest I've ever heard. And you and I were sitting next to each other for the wild card game, John, and yes,
it was madness.
It was madness.
Yeah.
But the Greg Bird home run, I've never heard anything like it.
I also think it's just this group. This is a different group. And you can go back to it and say, you know, this idea of, is this a rebuilding year? Is this not a rebuilding year? Whatever that is, there's just something about this team, I think, that, you know, inspires this level of just like, you know, all out craziness from the fans. You saw it from the very beginning of the season with Aaron Judge immediately becoming a folk hero and the Judge's Chambers thing starting. Maybe this isn't the nicest thing to say, but one of the most notable things to me is just game four, the nonstop, you know, chance at Jay Bruce. It's like, what are the chances that, you know, Jay Bruce could become an enemy of anybody? Jay Bruce happens to be like one of, you know, the world's nicest people.
He wasn't too impressed with the chance, said afterward. He was like, come on, guys.
Right.
But still.
That was the stuff, my point being, that was the stuff that wasn't there in 2010, in 2011, in 2012. There was just this idea of, it seemed, you know, okay, postseason baseball, let's see what happens. Whereas here, it was just like, we are part of this team, we are part of this group, and it is our job to help get them out of this 0-2 hole. That stuff can be overrated. That stuff can be maybe a little silly. I'm not going to say that the Yankees won three games in a row because of a chant against Jay Bruce, but I will say that if you're going to do that stuff, it's pretty awesome to have the fans be on your side in that way. And it was an awesome environment here. That I was here when they clinched in 2009, and that was bedlam, obviously. But I don't know if I've ever heard sustained over the course of several games like it's been so far for this postseason.
And the players, they hear it and they feel it, and they all spoke to it afterwards. When a pitcher's on the mound and he's got two strikes on a batter, and the crowd is
in
just
the first inning.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. From the first inning to the very last inning.
Yeah.
They are,
or like in
on
game
their
four
feet.
with a big lead. Mm-hmm. You know, the crowd still was not,
they never let up.
No.
And you know, one thing that impressed me a lot is, you know, wild card game, you know, the first inning goes so badly. And yeah, it got a little quieter in there, but it didn't fall off a cliff in the way it sounded like Progressive Field did last night.
Right.
Where the air got sucked out of that stadium so fast. Obviously, you know, in the wild card game, it did pick up once Gregorius hit the home run.
Oh, yeah.
But you didn't get that feeling of just like, why are we here? Like, oh my God, this is over.
Right.
In the first
people
inning.
People weren't like getting up and leaving, or like just leaving their seats and going to eat. Like, they were sitting there. And for Brett Gardner's at bat, when he had that long at bat, they were there. They were cheering. They were on their feet for that too. So I think they stuck with it.
So here we are, you know, done with the division series. I think it's worth pointing out two of the biggest at bats of the postseason run so far have been Brett Gardner's first at bat of the playoffs, which mm-hmm. was just a walk, you know, which didn't mm-hmm. seem huge in the moment, but
the Yanks had fallen behind 3-0 in the top of the first. Severino gets knocked out of the game, and you're thinking, all right, if we're gonna come back, we need to start now.
We need to at least get a run. That was my thought. We need to at least get one run.
You know, Brett Gardner starts off the bottom half of the frame by drawing a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Huge.
And anytime you're getting on base in front of Aaron Judge, you know, you're doing right. something pretty positive. And then, obviously, 2 hours later, or 3 hours later, Gregorius hits the home run and hit the reset button. I think it's pretty amazing that with all the players on this team and the storylines on this team, and even, frankly, over the last 3 days, the pitching on this team, it's going to be hard. If things go for the rest of this postseason run the way the Yankees want them to, you know, you're going to have to spare a place in the storybook of, you know, the 2017 Yankee season for that ninth inning at bat by Brett Gardner last night.
It's incredible.
I was on the edge of my couch. I was like, Brett, let's go. Let's go, Brett. Come on. One more pitch. Keep going. Yeah. I needed a massage after it. I was so tense.
It wasn't the game-winning hit. Chapman didn't give up a run. So, you know, you can play the sliding doors game all you want, but it didn't matter into the outcome of the game on paper. But and frankly, it really should have only been, you know, one run coming in there. It was a second run because of the error. Mm-hmm. But just that was as fierce an at bat as I remember watching.
And he credited Judge afterwards, which is interesting when you have a guy who, what was he, 1-for-20 in mm-hmm. the series? But still, just the season that Aaron Judge had, he still
fastball,
strikes.
Fastball, 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 right. fastball, fastball. They didn't want to walk him.
Exactly. You can't load the bases. Yeah, for a guy who hit 53 home runs. So, you know, Gardner knew, sit on the fastball and wait till I get one in the zone. And being the professional, experienced, veteran hitter he is, he knows what to do with a pitch like that.
And, man, there's something to the fact that Allen works so unbearably slowly that it just made that like even more epic, because it felt like there was a minute and a half between, like, you know, battles in this war. Just every pitch, and this, he would just fight these things off. And man, you can't you know, not tell the story of Didi Gregorius from this game. You can't not talk about what CeCe did and what Robertson did and all these things. You know, you always want to be too careful that, you know, in trying to prop up a smaller moment, you don't forget some of the bigger moments that put it there. But man, that at bat is just not to be forgotten.
And you put yourself in the Indians' shoes. Okay, we face Chapman in the eighth. We're down by one. Maybe we run into one in the ninth and tie this game.
Kind of like last year.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
It's in the back of everybody's mind.
But the way Chapman's been throwing this postseason, mm-hmm. once it goes from a one-run game to a three-run game and you only got three outs to work with.
And that ninth inning, look, I mean, that ninth, he was not the oldest Chapman in the ninth inning that he had been in the eighth inning.
He had been sitting for over a half hour.
Sure. So it was shakier, though. It was, if that was a one-run game, that's very different. Obviously, if it's a one-run game, he's probably not sitting for a half hour.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, he got it done, and he didn't give up a run. But, man, that was a very different situation because of that at bat. But, you know, let's talk about Didi Gregorius, maybe.
Again,
this goes
game.
Back to the wild card game. There's a lot of symmetry between the wild card game and game five last night. But, you know, Didi saved, you know, the bacon in the wild card game by really resetting that game. And, I mean, that was pretty incredible last night.
Didi is one of, I don't know if it's fair to say that he doesn't get enough credit, because I think he is getting credit, but I still think people overlook him a little bit in favor of the Judges and the Sanchezes and even Severino. I think Didi is still inexplicably flying under the radar on this team.
Not for long.
Yeah, a few more postseason games like this, and that will not be the case. But, I mean, if I told you before the series that we were going to have to face Corey Kluber in games 2 and 5 and that he wasn't going to make it to the fifth in either one.
I think he totaled less than 6 total innings against us.
Just amazing. I don't know what the Yankees, you know, scouting report or game plan was against him, but whatever it was genius, because, I mean, he's an incredible pitcher. It was scary having the prospect of having to face him twice in a short series like that. And I mean, the way they attacked him was just, it's incredible.
I say this as, you know, just a general baseball fan, someone who really loves watching the game. I love watching Kluber pitch. I was excited to see a long battle in game 2 and then in game 5 with Kluber. And I was a little bit, you know, bummed that it didn't play out that way, just because I think it's more interesting when, you know, great players do great things in the postseason. I think Kluber is a great player. Part of me hopes maybe he was a little hurt here, but you know, when it's not against you know, the team that gets me a paycheck every other week, I do really, really hope that, you know, next year and beyond, we can see again what we saw from him in the second half, because he's just been so much fun to watch this year.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna see some more great players coming to Yankee Stadium. We got more games here coming up next week.
More games, more baseball.
You know, these Houston Astros, I feel the same about the Astros as I do about the Indians. The regular season they had was incredible. I mean, we had a losing record against both these guys in the regular season. But as we just saw, the postseason's a different animal. So, Hillary, what are you expecting here in this next round?
I am excited to see kind of the matchup between somebody in the stadium next week is going to win the MVP. It's either going to be Altuve or it's going to be Judge. So I'm kind of excited to see them face off and how they can do in this series.
I'm just excited to see them stand next to each other.
I know. I think the pictures are going to be great. I just want, you know, got to get that gram of Altuve and Judge. I think I'm interested to see how we fare against Keuchel, especially after what he did to us a couple years ago in the wild card game when he completely just manhandled us. I want to see how we fare against him now with this much different team in this much different situation. I don't know. I think, like you said, anything can happen. So I really, my expectations are zero at this point. I don't know what to expect. I am just here for it. I am here for all of it, and we'll see what happens. I think it'll be fun.
This is house money. I mean, this season was not supposed to go this way. And it's weird to say that from, you know, an office in Yankee Stadium. I think that the Astros are a great team. I seem to recall several years ago, Sports Illustrated predicting that they would win the World Series this year. So maybe they're right on their way. But I wouldn't want to play the Yankees. I said that before the Indian series. Mm-hmm. I feel that way now. You know, you've seen a team play really badly in one game and then get kind of unlucky in a second game. But if they can get 5 innings from their starting pitcher, I don't think that you expect that the Yankees will lose the game.
There is no quit in this team. No matter what, they play till the last out, they play till the last game, they play till the last pitch. They are in it for the long haul, these guys, and they keep saying they're not done yet. They want to keep going.
And, you know, the thing that I liked about this team going into the postseason was the fact that everybody is healthy. You know, like, there's been years where we kind of have sort of limped into the postseason, or you might be missing one key guy. I mean, this lineup, it's like 1 through 9. You've got professional hitters that can do damage in every spot in the lineup every night. All of our starters are healthy. You know, the bullpen in great shape. So, and I'd also like to see us not fall in an 0-3 hole and have to battle back with elimination game after elimination game. I'd like to see.
I mean, we're good at it, but I would prefer not to. My heart can't take it anymore.
Yeah, it would be nice to, you know, kind of go toe-to-toe for a little bit.
But, you know, the little maybe undervalued, underappreciated part of this division series is that, you know, a lot of our offense actually didn't show up for it.
Yeah, if we can get a couple more guys actually hitting the ball.
Yeah, I mean, we have a designated hitter position, which it would be nice to get some hits from. You figure that's going to happen over the course of the next 7 games. You figure Aaron Judge is going to hit. You figure Gary Sanchez is going to hit. Greg Bird had a huge hit, but he didn't have that much more. If some of these guys start hitting, again, just like, you know, I said that, you know, you get 5 innings from your starter and the bullpen can do the rest. Well, you get 7 runs from your offense. This team should be able to win all these games. Like, it just, if these guys can start hitting. I remember feeling, you know, later in the season after the really bad run was through, that there were still some guys that were just like, man, they're winning now and these guys aren't hitting. Like, imagine if these guys do start hitting, then sure enough in September the team, you know, started just crushing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're through the division series now. These guys aren't really hitting. If they start hitting, I truly believe that can, even if the pitching comes down the level from where it was in the division series, if they start hitting, we've seen with the Yankees offense can more than make up for insufficient pitching, I think.
Yeah.
And the pitching has been far from insufficient.
Absolutely.
So, again, anything can happen.
We didn't even mention, I mean, we gotta show some love because we all feel the same about CC Sabathia.
Oh my God, CC.
What an incredible performance in Game 5.
When I was doing my CC story, I was like, this is a guy that nobody's talking about. Like, he's been here. He's the big game pitcher. He's the one guy on the roster who's been the pitcher who's won these games, and nobody else was saying it. I was like, guys, this guy, this big guy out here in the corner, he's going to be the one, and he has been.
I know he only lasted into the fifth, but I was not. How many strikeouts did he finish?
Nine strikeouts.
Nine strikeouts in four and a third.
Four and a third innings.
Yeah,
and just, you know, what I really enjoyed was just like his overall body language last night. He was so calm. So relaxed.
Even after the bunt, once he got a divot the size of New Hampshire, he was just laughing at CeCe. He was like, gets angry if you bunted him. He's just laughing it up in the middle
of
an elimination.
He's having
so
much fun. This is where he lives. This is what he loves to do. This is how he loves to play.
I think it was after the first inning, the FS1 cameras caught him yawning in the dugout. He was trying to hide it, but it was like, wow, this guy is not nervous at all.
The thing that I'm going to keep forever, and again, I mentioned, you know, that there should be a special play save for the Brett Gardner at bat. I assume you guys both know where I'm about to go with this, but so fourth inning, gets the first out on another strikeout, and then just, I mean, he gave up 4 singles, you know, a couple of them, you know, just couple feet to the right.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was getting crushed, but obviously, you know, credit to Girardi, he made the right decision, got him out before it got bad. But Robertson comes in there, gets that double play, and the camera goes to CC in the dugout, just banging against the top of the rail in the dugout. You know, his head, like, it is just the perfect representation for us all to savor when CC Sabathia is no longer here to remember, like, who this guy was. Mm-hmm. It was just like, you know, I got knocked out of a playoff game earlier than I wanted to, but I am here for this. And then just that reaction, that was just like, you could just feel it coming off the screen, you know, the emotion and the relief in him when Robertson pulled another Houdini act, which is his thing.
I know, it's like he never left. It's like, you know, 2009 all over again. He throws a little slower now than he did back then, but he's still getting the job done, coming in with men on base in big postseason situations. And that was the first pitch, right? He came in through one pitch and got the double play.
No, I think he
was a couple pitches.
I think it was a couple pitches.
Because the first pitch was, they called it a strike, but it actually
it was questionable.
Well, CC, and I think CC got more than a few of those as well.
Sure. There was a few of those going around last night.
I do think that changed the complexion of the at bat, that call. But man, it was definitely you couldn't do any better than he did there. He got the double play ball. By the way, Gregorius in the field. I just love watching that guy throw. There was this amazing play later also where Starlin made a great play on a ball that took a funky little
shoveled
bounce.
Shoveled it a little bit. Yeah,
and you just watch like Didi receive this thing just so cleanly. Like, I love watching that guy field. I mean, he deserves all the credit he's getting right now for the offense, and he's lifted this team a lot in the course of the postseason so far, but I could watch him throw all day.
Yeah. All right, so.
It's been fun, guys.
It has been fun. I'm so excited that we have more baseball games at Yankee Stadium this year. Not
more
done
baseball.
Yet. And yeah, we're done, like I said, with making Yankees magazine for the year during the ALCS and the World Series, should we make it that far. The publications, the game day programs that are on sale are produced by Major League Baseball, not us. So this October issue is in the books, another season in the books for our publications. Officially.
We're going to keep finding ways to
we'll get you some stuff. Don't you worry.
John will be bringing you some more behind-the-scenes feature stories.
We are in the content business.
That's
here.
That's right.
So we'll keep
podcasting.
Content.
We'll keep tweeting. You know, just stick with us.
Yeah.
And we're not done yet.
We're not done yet.
That's right.
All right. See you soon, guys.
All right. Thanks.